in which we do a little macroeconomic back to the future. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, the 9th of December, 2022. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin this Thursday of next year with a trip to the Marketplace time machine. First of all, we're all kind of done with 2021, right? But also, we decided we just need a break from the pandemic economy grind we have all been living through. So indulge us, would you, as we take today's news and pay it forward a year. This being Thursday, the headline number of the day is jobs, and it's a good one. Just 184,000 first-time applicants for unemployment benefits last week, the fewest since Richard Nixon was in the White House. And that bodes well for the maintain full employment half of the Federal Reserve's dual mandate. News of the other half, stable prices, comes tomorrow with the Consumer Price Index, inflation, of course, for November. Now, we know the economy is recovering from the worst of the pandemic and that things have and will continue to change. So we thought maybe the question we ought to be asking is, what's this economy going to be like come December 9th, 2022? Marketplace's Justin Ho and Lily Jamali got a free ride in that Marketplace economic time machine today so that they could report back on what things look like a year from now. We start with Justin on the jobs of December future.
Okay, so it's December 9th, 2022. Cargo pants are popular. Influencers are posting pictures of themselves eating Jell-O salads. And Harvard economics professor Jason Furman says the jobs market is looking pretty solid.
The unemployment rate is in the 3% range. There are fewer than 200,000 people a week claiming unemployment insurance benefits.
Furman says that's a reasonable bet, since the unemployment rate tends to tick down over time.
So if I'm wrong, it's probably because we're in a recession, either caused by a terrible resurgence of the virus, a financial market accident, or something else.
We can't know about any of that, but we do know that the labor market has withstood COVID variants pretty well in 2021. George Perks at Bespoke Investment Group says that's because consumer demand has stayed strong.
I think the baseline assumption should be that we're not going to see big hits to consumer demand from a new variant.
What's more likely to happen over the course of 2022, he says, is that the blazing hot job market will cool down.
So we've seen from month to month roughly 400,000 jobs created every month. We can't create that many new jobs next year.
Another question is how many of those are high-quality jobs, says Kate Bond at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth.
And that includes jobs with attributes like paid leave, paid sick, scheduling stability, and adequate wages, of course.
Bond says workers were able to quit jobs without those attributes in 2021. That, she says, will need to continue for the economy to become more equal. Reporting from 2022, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
December 9th, 2022, as it happens, is a Friday, and that is where we find Marketplace's Lily Jamali on the inflation beat.
Nobody will say that predicting inflation a year out is easy.
But making a forecast that is reliable, you have to be very, very humble.
Southern Methodist University Business School professor Harvey Rosenblum would know. That forecasting was part of his job for some of his 43 years at the Dallas Fed. The pandemic and the fiscal policies that have come out of it, like federal stimulus checks, have made this harder.
The willingness to print money, if you will, and lean on central banks to finance government deficits has been a global phenomenon. That is a major factor that has been driving inflation.
And will do so for the next several years, he says. Don Desjardins, deputy chief economist at RBC, is more optimistic.
I think we'll be saying that inflation is lower than it was when we exited 2021, but that it remains higher than what we were experiencing before the pandemic.
She expects it'll still be hard to get people back to work, prompting wages to keep rising.
And as a result, that will keep price pressures a little hotter than they were prior to the pandemic.
This year, inflation has driven up prices on big ticket items like rent, vehicles, and food, says Ryan Wang, U.S. economist at HSBC. Knowing that is helpful, but he says it doesn't make the crystal ball any clearer.
I mean, if there's anything that economists have learned this year, it's the ability to be surprised repeatedly and significantly. So, I mean, I think that's probably the most valuable skill that we should have picked up over the course of this year.
Which is why Harvey Rosenblum's advice to stay humble might be good to remember. Reporting from December 2022, I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, by which I mean today, 2021, mostly sideways except tech, which was down hard as traders wait for tomorrow's all-important inflation number. I'm just going to straight up quote Joe Weisenthal from Bloomberg here. It's almost like CPI day, he said today on Twitter, is the new jobs day. Think about it. You'll get it. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. One of the great things about working a dozen miles from the most important container port in this entire economy is that you can get down there to report basically anytime you want. One of the not great things about working a dozen miles from the most important container port in this entire economy?
Once again, a story takes me to a place where I could easily get killed.
Third time, I think, down at the LA Long Beach Harbor this fall for me.
That's a really big box to be labeled fragile.
Today, it's a surprisingly small parking lot in Wilmington, California, just a couple of blocks from where 40% of all U.S. container imports get unloaded.
All right, that's as far as I'm going, right?
Yeah, he's going to pick up his crate right now. He's going to load the, this is the last crate he's going to load on that truck.
Antonio Cortez is the guy I'm talking to. We're kind of wedged between a bulldozer-sized forklift, seriously, it's huge, and a big stack of freight.
Going to Applied Materials in Round Rock, Texas. I have no idea what's inside.
It's CNC machines.
Wow.
To make parts.
Yeah.
And it's loud, really loud. Antonio's company, A&F Transportation, is one of almost 1,000 in the LA Long Beach area doing something called drayage.
We pick up containers from the port and bring them to wherever the warehouse or a yard or wherever they're going to be offloaded. That is drayage.
Not a common phrase in the supply chain parlance of the day, but drayage is the middle layer between you and how the stuff you buy gets to where you are. Basically, really short-haul trucking.
We pull them out of the port,
yeah,
and they deliver to the final destination.
Right, so once it's on that truck going to Texas, you're done.
I'm done.
This is the next stop in our series, Temporarily Unavailable, How Stuff Moves Around the World or Doesn't.
What do you do with containers that you have unloaded? You got a full container, you bring it in here, you unload it, then you got an empty container, then right. What do you do?
Well, we return them the best we can, but I've had containers here, these four here, I can't return.
And we should say, this is not a big piece of land here.
No, it's not. Right? It's about 30,000 square feet.
And you got containers all over the place.
And I got containers all over the place, correct. It wasn't always like this. I mean, I can return a container 1 or 2 days previous to all this madness, but now I'm about a week, 2 weeks.
And you just got to hang on to them.
I have to hang on to them. I've had containers here for about 2 months now.
And that's why this giant forklift is doing this dance.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's like a small, like, kid's playground that he's moving this huge forklift around.
Correct. And it affects us here because I can't bring anything more to the yard until stuff leaves.
Okay, so let's talk about the business here, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you can't get stuff in, mm-hmm. then you can't move the containers, which is how you make your money.
Correct. I've told my customers, you know what, they're ready, they're at the port. I can't pick them up because I can't bring them here because they don't fit, because I can't get rid of these empties.
Okay, so you would think, I would think, a layperson mm-hmm. looking at this would say, man, those supply chain guys, the truckers, mm-hmm. the container people, the drayage companies, they're making money hand over fist because they're moving so much stuff.
No.
Is that not happening?
No, you would think, but no, it's not. There's a lot more business out there to go get,
yeah.
but I can't get it because there's a limit to what I can. I have so many trucks, I have so much equipment, I have so much land. I can't do anything more.
That must make you crazy.
It does, yeah. There's a lot of business out there. I just can't do it.
A&F Transportation is a family-owned business. Antonio and his wife Francia started it 5 years ago, but they have been in this industry forever. They were both truckers themselves, as was his dad.
You know, every summer I would go with him, and this is all I know.
You ever seen anything like this?
No. I've seen ups and downs, but nothing like this.
Yeah.
No. This is once in a lifetime for me.
A&F has 9 trucks in its fleet right now, and before the supply chain crisis, that was plenty.
But because of the ports are backed up, they're slower than usual, I can't get as many loads out with the 9 drivers as I used to.
Yeah.
So in theory, yes, there is a driver shortage, but if the ports were working like they were before,
right,
we could do with the drivers we have now.
Tell me about a day in the life of your drivers. They show up,
mm-hmm.
you get the spreadsheet out of the office, and you say, mm-hmm. okay, you're going here, you're going there. You got a 10 o'clock pickup at the port.
Right.
Then what happens?
So usually we have 8 a.m. Okay. appointments, 10 or 11 a.m. Yeah. for their second trip. If one of them gets stuck 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, that 10 a.m. appointment we just missed.
And that's what's happening, right? I mean, your drivers are sitting there.
Yes, and it snowballs. It snowballs from we missed that appointment, we missed the 1 o'clock appointment, and it just screws up the day. And
so what do you do? It's like you're powerless.
It is.
Can we go inside and you can show me like the order system and how all that works?
Yes.
The logistics of the logistics are kind of interesting.
Yeah, so
I'm following you.
Okay, so I'm not the one that makes the appointments here. I'll introduce you to my dispatch team here.
There we go.
And they can tell you what their issues are trying to make appointments and return empties.
Excellent.
So this is my daughter, Pamela.
Hi, Pamela. Oh, it really is a family business.
Yes, yeah. It is.
Your dad and now you. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me what we're looking at.
Okay, so for this is all the containers we have pending for today for pickup. With the appointment times.
Oh, there you go. There's the 8 o'clock appointment. There's the 10 o'clock appointment. And, of course, all those are going to get missed, right?
Possibly,
right? I mean, come on. Your dad just told me.
Yeah. And the other biggest issue that we have is the empties. This is the list of all of the empties we have in our yard.
Yeah.
We have 2 containers here in our yard that's been here for about 2 months. No return locations.
You should start charging them rent.
We do.
Oh, do you? Good.
We do.
Good. How much is the rent?
We charge $50 a day.
Yeah, you got to up it.
Yeah,
$75 or $100.
Right.
Got to be.
Okay, but so there's this thing called per diem charges. If you don't return this empty in 5 days, the terminals or the actual steamship line will send invoices to us for us to pay the per diem charges. But how do they
expect So you're charging the company's rent if their containers get stuck here.
Yeah.
But then the ports charge you per diem for not returning the...
For not being able to return them when there isn't any return location.
Does this sound crazy to you too?
Yeah.
Okay. Seems crazy. That's all I'm saying. Let me go get your dad.
That's great. She's sharp. She's really sharp.
Oh, she's going to be running this place.
No joke, right? No joke.
Yeah.
What else do I need to ask you about?
A lot of people maybe don't understand and say, these truckers just don't want to get the containers out, but it's not that easy. I can only pull so many containers a day.
And there's 100,000 containers floating around out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got 9 trucks, and the guy down the street has 9 trucks, and somebody else has 8 and whatever.
Yeah.
And so it all kind of has to work together, and that's the challenge.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Thanks, Antonio. I appreciate it.
No problem.
I'll tell you what, this global supply chain machine, it's got a whole lot of really important little cogs in it. Next stop in our series, Temporarily Unavailable, warehouses and the gears that they turn. I'm telling you, it's a tiny little yard he was working with. All right, anyway, coming up.
You have a target on your back.
I mean, that's what happens when you got something everybody else wants, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials did not budge today, down way, way less than a single point. 35,754 on the blue chips. The NASDAQ down 269, 1.7%, finished at 15,517. The S&P 500 retreated 33 points, about 0.7%, 46 and 67. Starbucks workers in Buffalo, New York, have voted to join a union. That is a first for that company. Starbucks worked for months to persuade baristas to reject the union. SBUX shares down 0.7% today. Let's run through some quarterly earnings reports, shall we? Starting with Hormel, based in Austin, Minnesota, the maker of such American staples as Skippy peanut butter, corn nuts, and Dinty Moore beef stew, reported better than expected quarterly revenue and earnings per share. Hormel added 4.7%. They Rent the Runway, HQ'd in NYC, down 4.1%. The e-commerce platform that lets users rent, buy, or subscribe to apparel said its customer base has not yet returned to pre-pandemic levels. People don't have anywhere to go. Bond prices rose. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.49%. You are listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today is clearly a day on this program for calendar comparisons. Tuesday this week, the Bureau of Labor Statistics released its revised look at third quarter labor productivity. And good news, it was not. The BLS says productivity fell about 5% July through September, the biggest drop since 1960. Economists, of course, keep a real close eye on productivity. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains why the rest of us ought to care, too.
Economist Erica Groshen used to run the Bureau of Labor Statistics, so she cares a lot about the labor productivity number. She says it's a measure of worker output, the upshot of our toil behind a desk or machine.
For 1 hour of work, how much on average do we produce?
Groshen says labor productivity data can tell us a lot about our standard of living, which could rise if we're more productive. The IRS can use it to forecast how much it'll collect in taxes, because if productivity rises, workers and businesses can make more money and pay more taxes. But economists aren't going to hang their forecasts on the labor productivity number. It's just one piece of the puzzle.
And that productivity piece is probably one of those fuzzy pieces you've been trying to figure out where it goes.
Ellis Pfeiffer is a strategist at Raymond James. He says worker productivity can confirm other data he follows. He wasn't surprised when productivity dropped over the summer. Think about what was happening. Prices for raw materials and wages were rising. When it costs more to make something, that's inefficient.
The unit labor cost has been rising. I think that's probably the biggest issue.
Labor productivity is about long-term trends, and it generally goes up. Brookings Institution economist Stephanie Aronson says it would be very unusual for productivity to keep falling.
Times I can think of where we've seen a really sustained drop in productivity growth are like when Rome fell and the barbarians took over, you know?
Fortunately, the barbarians are not at the gate. It's just the pandemic. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
If you want to buy a military or a commercial jet engine, one of the relatively few purveyors of same is GE Aviation. At the moment, a subsidiary of the original American conglomerate, GE, soon to be a standalone company, as we told you when General Electric announced it's breaking itself up early last month. Anyway, I told you that so I could tell you this. At about the same time that GE was making its announcements, a federal jury convicted a Chinese intelligence officer of attempting to commit economic espionage and theft of trade secrets. Which trade secrets, you ask? GE's jet engine technology, of course, so that he could then hand it over to a Chinese company that Beijing wants to build into a competitor to Airbus and Boeing. As Marketplace's Sabri Benishour reports, this is just one part of what American intelligence officials say is a larger effort by the Chinese.
Mark Widmer spends a lot of time thinking about cybersecurity.
We're constantly being attacked.
Widmer is the CEO of First Solar, one of the few American solar manufacturers to survive competition from China's at one point highly subsidized solar industry. First Solar uses a unique technology to generate solar energy, and Widmer knows Chinese companies want it.
I've been approached by Chinese associates requesting us to manufacture in China, and they've highlighted benefits they would be willing to provide.
Subsidies, free buildings, low-cost loans, he's refused.
because we don't want to expose our technology to the potential risk.
Risk of theft. And it's not simply rival companies he has to worry about.
So it's most certainly guided by the Chinese government.
Michael Orlando is acting director of the National Counterintelligence and Security Center, a government agency that focuses on threats from foreign powers.
The Chinese government is using all instruments of national power, from espionage to legal acquisitions and joint ventures, to acquire specific technologies so they can be the world leaders in those technologies.
China's government has a number of development plans focused on technologies it wants China to dominate. Intelligence experts say by any means necessary.
China really looks at the development of science and technology as zero sum. That's really the driver behind a lot of the activities that we see.
Anna Puglisi is director of biotech programs and a senior fellow at Georgetown Center for Security and Emerging Technology. U.S. prosecutors have accused Chinese spies and hackers working with the government of stealing trade secrets from a long list of foreign targets. Solar and steel companies, makers of computer chips and airplanes, labs doing COVID research, healthcare companies, universities. It goes on and on.
If you work in an industry that's one of the priority industries that the Chinese government has set out in one of their forward-looking plans, you have a target on your back.
Roy Kamphausen is president of the National Bureau of Asian Research and executive director of the Commission on the Theft of American Intellectual Property. He says when it comes to sensitive technologies, the relationship between Chinese firms and their government is different than it is in economies like the U.S., Korea, Japan, or Europe. They can ask China's intelligence services for help.
Can you imagine, though, if a major American company would say to the U.S. government, you know, we're entering into negotiations with a potential partner in XYZ country. Can the CIA help answer these questions about how that company operates, about its trade secrets? I mean, even as you say those words, it just sounds ridiculous, right? But it's a very real thing that's happening.
Cyber attacks in particular have been evolving.
Well, it's massive. So we'll start with that.
Adam Myers is Senior VP of Intelligence at CrowdStrike, a cybersecurity firm. He's tracked cyber attacks linked to the People's Liberation Army and the Ministry of State Security and Public Safety, as well as regional intelligence services. Myers says these attacks are becoming more sophisticated. They're going after cloud services and telecom companies, for example.
To enable, you know, going after other targets that might be using those telecoms.
The targets, he says, map closely to the industries in which China's government has said it wants to dominate. China's embassy did not respond to a request for comment for this story, but in other instances, Chinese officials have called allegations of state-sponsored industrial espionage fabrications. Georgetown's Anna Puglisi says ultimately, for China's government, economic security and national security are one and the same.
Our system isn't set up to counter these actions of a nation state.
And that has a cost. The IP Commission tried to estimate it, the cost of hacking, theft of intellectual property, knockoff products all generally.
It is as large as $600 billion a year.
He says trade secret theft in particular has cost the U.S. and other OECD countries 1 to 3% of GDP, with China inflicting an estimated 60 to 80% of the damage. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, this one is from the Hutchins Center at Brookings, some research they did on PhD economists who work for the federal government. First of all, there are 2,266 econ PhDs at the various departments and agencies. 29% of them are women, 26% are minorities. The Federal Reserve, both the Fed in Washington and the regional banks, perhaps not surprisingly, they employ 40% of PhD economists. Surprisingly, perhaps, was to me anyway, the next most econ PhD heavy department in the entire government of the United States? Anyone? The Department of Agriculture. All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. Following up on that trip down to the ports earlier in the program, and Antonio telling me he's actually doing less business now because the ports are so backed up. The Port of Long Beach announced today, and to be clear, that's only half of the L.A. Long Beach port complex. Anyway, Long Beach said they moved almost 5% fewer containers TEU is the actual statistic, 20-foot equivalent unit. Anyway, Long Beach moved 5% fewer of them last month than they did in November a year ago because there is just not enough room to unload them. The more backed up things get, the more backed up things get, you know? All right, we're going. Amir Babawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, and Diantha Parker are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.